podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, it's the Anfield Wrap. Me, Gareth Roberts, presenting this week. And with me, I've got Tony Barrett, John Gibbons and Mike Nevin. We're going to be talking about last night's Watford game and everything that's to follow, really. Three games left, so are Liverpool going to get in the Champions League? What do we think of all the players? What do we think might happen next season? We're just going to have a big chat. There's not a big strict agenda for this one. But it wasn't a classic. Liverpool did all the things they've been criticised for, though. They fought, they dug in. They won aerial battles, the keeper came for things, and most of all, they won. So just starting at the start, I'll start with you, Tony. From the very first kickoff, really, it was clear, I think, what Watford's game plan, wasn't it? And they were very physical from the very first whistle.
No, they were, and rightly so, because that brought them success in the game against Liverpool last season, which was a 3-0 win for them, and they obviously thought going the same way. And Alan Pardew, I watched home on Sky, and Alan Pardew was coming up with all the things about Liverpool are a team you can get at, the keeper's a weakness. Then the game goes on and the commentators kept saying that Klopp won't be happy with this, and I'm thinking, you know what, I think he will be happy with this, because I think the misjudgment is to think that Klopp wants Liverpool playing like they were in October, when Klopp's long since accepted that the Liverpool of March, April, May is not going to be the Liverpool of last autumn. So the Liverpool of now is one that he looks to control away games, one which he looks for the team to be physical, to be resolute, to be mentally strong. It's not going to be a team that goes and creates 7-8 clear-cut chances like it, as I say, they were doing early in the season. So I do think that game plan was what he wanted, and the idea is always that within that game plan, you'll have superior quality, and at a certain point, that quality will show. It nearly showed when Lallana struck the bar, which would have been a great goal in itself. And then it does in the kind of circumstances that I don't think anyone would have expected. And Chan's overhead kick is, for me, one of the great Liverpool goals. When you look at the size of the man, when you look at the time of the run, when you look at the spring to get up there, you look at the technique, you look at the way the ball arcs into the top corner, everything about it. I'm one of those, I love team goals, I love passing moves and all the rest. A great ball in by Lucas, by the way. But I love passing moves, love it when Liverpool break teams down and score. That wasn't quite like that, but in terms of individual skill, it's up there with any that you'll ever see.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we've seen before, Mike, from Liverpool, maybe in these types of games, and indeed when we played Watford about a year or so ago, it did feel then, and not last night, that they could be bullied, that they could be troubled by the likes of Troy Deeney, for example. And there were some quite hefty challenges going in, weren't there? I mean, you know, Coutinho's off early. There's other ones, you know, Firmino's nearly sent into the standby. Deeney at one point, and the referee's not intervening for some reason. Deeney tries to throw a little stamp on Mignolet even at one point. And so again, it was clear, like Tony says, from what Pardew was saying on the telly, that there is a thing out there. You know, Liverpool can be bullied. And yeah, you know, you look at Stoke, West Brom, and now this. Klopp's gone a long way to fix it at teams.
Yeah, it certainly seems to. I think we've challenged the perception that we don't have the fight, the bottle, and the character over the last couple of months, really. And Tony and I were talking before the first half of the season. It was great to admire the free flowing football. We haven't actually played any of that really since Christmas, but we've become a lot better at dogging out results. Like last night was a case in point. It was very similar to West Brom in terms of the time that we got the goal. I think I agree that, you know, Klopp's being a bit more pragmatic about the way games are going to turn out, and you are going to rely on your greater quality. Just as far as the goals concerned, I mean, Liverpool in their history haven't scored many spectacular overhead goals. I mean, there's the Quatez one in recent times that stands out, but not many of that ilk. And
Barnsley at Blackburn,
but that's right, was a good
didn't
one.
We lost both those games, didn't we?
QPR and Blackburn. 3-2, yeah. So it's nice to get a winning goal in such spectacular fashion. But I don't think you can overstate its brilliance, because it's the height that he is off the ground when he strikes it, and you know. For a big man to be able to sort of arc his body into that position and get such a clean contact on the ball. I mean, even that famous Rooney overhead, it was off the shin, wasn't it?
Yeah.
This was absolutely off the instep. And it seemed to curve in as well.
Yeah.
My initial reaction was that it was going wide, and I was quite shocked to see it ripple the net. But it was, goal worthy of winning the game, and it was out of place really with the overall proceedings, where there wasn't an awful lot of quality. But as I say, I mean, that's something that Liverpool have added to the game.
You know what else was great about the goal as well was Emre Can's interview, because there's so much media train bollocks when someone scored a great goal and they say, oh, you know, it's all about the 3 points and it's all about the team, and Emre just went, nah, it's the best goal I've ever scored.
Yeah,
and I was like, you know, rightly so, like, big yourself up.
Definitely, and you know, that, maybe that's an expression of the sort of personal journey that he's been on as well. It's been difficult for him this season. The calf injury that he'd been suffering from more or less all the way through the season hadn't been particularly well documented publicly. I think it was only sort of revealed after the Burnley game, which is another game where he's got another superb winning goal. And I think gradually what he's done is played himself into Liverpool's season. He's had the opportunity to start because there's been injuries, and I think now we're looking at him as a quality player. I think there were lots of doubts about him. He was quite erratic. And certainly for the time being, I think he's put a lot of those doubts behind him. And for Liverpool now, it's essential really that he gets tied up on a longer deal, because you can't afford to be losing players of what is still a lot of potential in terms of his age and his development as a midfielder.
I mean, there's been doubts about him, hasn't he? But I think that the thing that I would probably come back to it on is, if right now, say he goes tomorrow, he's not going to, but say he goes tomorrow, what are you paying to buy Emre Can?
You're probably starting with another project. And I think people forget how many games he's played for Liverpool. I mean, it's upwards of 100 appearances for Liverpool. He's actually quite experienced now. And I think that's where you are beginning to see signs of his progression into a more mature midfielder. He does a lot. He does lots of different things. And if he can add a few more goals to his game, and that's five in the league for this season. You know, if he can be aiming for, you know, double figures, then I think you've got something approaching the complete midfielder.
What Mike said about the journey, spot on. If you go back 2 months, I don't think anyone would have been clamouring for Emre Can to be in the team. Whereas
people
now,
were quite blasé about the contract issue as well, weren't they?
Oh yeah, and you couldn't contemplate a Liverpool team without him in it. It's one of those, if everyone's available, he's playing. It's that simple, and he's grown in stature. I think he's a natural leader. I don't think Liverpool have got many, but I think he does have that stature about him. And that was, I mean, the goal last night, it's brilliant technique, but it's also that thing, that desire to make the game about you. I'm going to be the one who makes the difference. I'm going to make this run. I'm going to show my ability. I'm going to score the goal that gets us 3 points, and that's the type of leadership. And that's the way he's on his, just on his contract. It's always more difficult than it seems on the outside, and it's his big thing is he wants to play. So when the contract negotiations start, he's not in the team. So he quite rightly says, I want to see where I am in the team. Jordan Henderson's playing, I'm not. I've got a few injury problems. The manager's not picking me. I'm going to have to wait and see how this goes. But something else that you always have to bear in mind is how you came to get the player. The player came to Liverpool because his agent manipulated the clause in his contract, took him from out of buy-in to Bayer Leverkusen, had a clause inserted, and Liverpool exploit that clause. So when you come about a player like that, you have to expect that when the contract negotiations come about, they're not going to be straightforward, because the agent's going to do everything he can to act in the, they all do anyway, but the agent's going to do everything he can to act in the best interest of the player, and that's just the reality of life now.
John, you were in the ground last night. I mean, Emre, as well as the brilliant goal, and I'd like you to tell us about how the end went off for that one. But also as well, I mean, like, I think like's being said there, for a while now, he feels like the one in the midfield who's got that thing where he says, right, I'm going to make things happen. The stuff like you used to see, you know, from a Steven Gerrard, from that type of figure where, you know, they'll just, he'll go on there. He tried it a few times last night. He goes on them runs. He takes two or three people on.
Yeah.
Try and have a shot or win a free kick or just make something happen, really.
Yeah, he has. He does take it on himself, and at least that kind of leader, what Tony was talking about. So I'm glad he's carrying the ball now more. I think that's something that's developed into his game, really. He's got like a bit of a sidestep, and he'll you know, he won't necessarily smash someone for pace, but just because they don't really know quite what he's going to do when he carries it forward, he can catch a few midfielders out, and that's good because it takes people out the game when they're sat deep and they're, you know, say, well, you kind of break us down, and he's got that in him. I think, as you know, I was going to say nearly as impressive as the finish, but it's not, because that's the finish is ridiculous. But the purpose of that run's great, because, you know, you've been looking at this team last few weeks and saying, oh, well, is it? Are we an attacking player short? You know, the midfield looks a bit too workmanlike, and without maybe Lallana there or whatever, and is there someone who can break the lines and can get forward like what Lallana was doing? Well, Can does that. He takes it on himself to burst into that space, and it's a control finish as well, which is just kind of incredible, really. And I think that catches out Gomez, who just doesn't sort of move. And to answer your question about the end, I think it was just a bit of shock, really. Like, everyone was, a few people had disappeared for a pint, I'll be honest with you. I was in there and you know, you're just looking at each other, just laughing. And, like, you know, you just sort of almost forget to celebrate. And then you're like, oh, yeah, you know, go as well, because it's at the other end as well. So you're like, bloody hell. And then good on Watford, they show all the replays, like, which a lot of clubs don't. You know, if the opposition do something good, they're like, oh, nah, forget that. But they showed about three replays, and there's just kind of cheers every time you see it go in again. Like, a brilliant moment and a really good moment for him, and his confidence is there. And I agree with the lads, he does need tying down, because I think aside from everything else he brings, and I think pretty much most of the club, not every club in Europe, but most of the clubs would be having a look at him if suddenly Emery Chan become available. And I think it becomes a failure of the policy of investing in youth if you play them while they're raw, wait till they get better and then don't take advantage of it. Yeah. It just sort of becomes like, well, what was the point of the old thing?
Yeah, I mean, he is the archetypal sort of money ball signing in a way, because I mean, it was about £10 million that we got him for, which was very much based on potential, as Tony says, you know, sort of exploiting the clause in the contract as well. So his actual worth, even at the time of signing, could have been significantly higher. One thing I've really liked about him and the way that he's played himself into form, it's been through scrapping, really. There was the game at City when the game became quite chaotic. He threw in a couple of decent challenges that gave Liverpool a bit of momentum, gave his own game a little bit of tempo. And in that quite functional three of Lucas, Wijnaldum and Chan, he's the one who can just sort of sprinkle a little bit of stardust. He's the one that's got a little bit more beyond what you might describe as normal ability. I think he's got an element of class to his game. And as I say,
do you think that's actually sort of prescribed as well? So I mean, I was looking at last night our midfield, and I was thinking exactly what you've just said, that, you know, it looks a bit workmanlike with Lucas, with Wijnaldum. But it felt like they were very disciplined, those two, and that Chan had more of a license to sort of be, you know, go do those runs. They very much held their shape a lot. I know Lucas plays the ball, and it's a good ball, and he's now got something mad like 3 assists in 5 games, and before that, the similar numbers in about 167 or something. But you know, fair play to him. Yeah. I think
like Chan's probably got more license to get forward. Yeah. Earlier in the season, he talked about the contrast between playing the number 6 position, which he'd occasionally done as a deputy for Henderson, and then playing further forward as a number 8, as they call it. And what I thought was interesting about last night's game, though, and the way that the midfield set up, is that although nominally Lucas be holding in the 6 role, his position on the field was significantly higher at times. And it was from that sort of space on the field where he supplies the assist. And I was just quite interested, really. I think obviously Watford sat very deep off Liverpool, and it gave Liverpool the opportunity to push up further. But I thought Lucas's position was interesting. I think Wijnaldum didn't have the greatest of games. He was probably doing a lot of unseen work because, you know, sort of filling in for Chan getting forward and Lucas occupying spaces higher up.
Yeah, it was. I mean, you mentioned before, I wanted to get you all on this, that there was a lot of criticism on the telly. I also seen it on the BBC Live blog. There's also a piece in The Guardian today. All very critical of what Liverpool did last night. And yet Liverpool won. Liverpool won an absolutely crucial away, and in the type of game that, you know, they've been known to lose in the past. And I just thought, that first half, all right, it's not entertaining to watch. It's not great to watch. There aren't loads of chances, etc. and so on. But Liverpool have all the ball. Liverpool's defenders win the battles. The keeper's coming when he has to. He makes saves when he has to. You know, there's loads of positives there, and yet there's a big focus on that it's not a lovely game to watch in that first half.
But it's some of it's accident, some of it's design, isn't it? Because the accidents are the injuries. So you lose Mane. You lose a lot of your attacking thrust. It's a lot of the reasons why.
On the night.
Yeah, a lot of the reasons why you're irresistible in October, no longer there in that game last night, and particularly after Coutinho goes off. It's a totally different game. You're playing through Origi rather than Firmino, which I think is a problem. But it's need most of the moment. You've got to do whatever you can, get bodies out on the pitch. And I think the design elements, Klopp did recognise this, and I wasn't sure whether he was the type of manager who could execute this kind of formation, this kind of plan. But I think Liverpool, for several years, not just this one, several years, have needed to be a team that can be robust at difficult away games. I look at Atletico Madrid, they were always the template for me. Everyone wants Liverpool to be Real Madrid, but we're not there yet. We're nowhere near there. So let's be the best that we can be at the moment. At the moment, that means going to difficult places, where you're not made to play that kind of football and find a way to win. And that to me was always the Liverpool way. Whenever people said Liverpool way, to me it was find a way to win. Don't get carried away with that way or that way. Just get there and do whatever it takes. Get out with the points. And that's what they've done in three successful away games. In three away games that I think a lot of people looked at and thought, this is where Liverpool top four hopes go up in smoke. Stoke, West Brom, Watford. Three teams, direct, long throws, corners, set pieces. Everything that Liverpool can't deal with. And they've come away and they've conceded one goal in those three games. And it hasn't been nice to watch. No one would pay to watch those games again. The game last night is illuminated by one moment of genius, but the rest of the game, no one's needed to see it. It isn't a good football match. But in terms of getting results that matter, that is the approach that Liverpool need more of. And the big thing for me now is that I didn't want Liverpool to go all guns blazing into the top four. I wanted Liverpool to limp into the top four. So I think if Liverpool went all guns blazing, it would cover up a lot of the weaknesses that are there. I think the way it is, we can see all the weaknesses. We can see the lack of strength in depth. We can see the lack of firepower at times up front. We can see the need for a little bit more class midfield. We can see the need for a top-class centre-back. We can see the need for maybe a right-back to give us a little bit more options than Klein's given us, because I think Klein's been awful for 6 or 7 months. I think all those little weaknesses to the four, I think now they can be dealt with. Had we gone in all guns blazing, and we're not there yet, but if we get into the top four, no problem at all, you might be able to go, we don't actually need to do that much this team, and I think this team needs a lot of work.
Well, I'll do the full-backs, so I had that down as a thing to talk about. I think Milner saw a lot of the ball last night. As Tony said, Klein looked to be struggling at times, certainly. You know, he's sort of getting to a certain point on the pitch, and then it's almost, he hasn't really got an idea what to do next. I wonder whether some of that is down to actual people being in the box. I mean, there was one where he was looking to square, and there wasn't really anyone there. I noticed that, but in general, though, it feels there's a lot of conversations now about both fullbacks and about whether basically we can go another season, especially one where we hope to be challenging. And bear in mind the standard of the league as well. I wanted to mention that too, because you know Spurs conceivably could finish with 89 points this season and not win the league, and that's sort of that bar seems to be where we're going to be for going forward, really. Because you don't see Spurs breaking up that side. If anything, they're probably going to improve it. Chelsea the same. Man United, Man City both spend money, and so on and so on. So that's the type of points total you've got to aim for, sort of every season, and hope that it's your season almost. So if Liverpool go into next season with Klein and Milner at fullback as a plan, you know, how are you gonna feel about that?
I'll feel all right with it. I think that the plan seems to be is to get a younger left back in, ship Moreno out, and kind of let him develop. I think Milner's been one of the better left backs this season. I know what you're saying about, you know, looking at the standard out there, but in terms of fullbacks, I don't see a huge amount in natural ability between Klein and say Kyle Walker, who might be going to Barcelona apparently. But you know, I don't see a huge amount there. I just think Klein looks to me like he's played a lot of football without a break, and his sort of his head's as tired. I think he's quite mentally tired. I don't think physically he's allowed to get, he's going on, but he just, I don't know, his head just seems a bit muddled to me. There's not that clarity of force, as you say. He's getting there and kind of not really sure what we're doing, whereas we've seen good attacking performances from him, so we know he can do it. I just think he needs maybe a sort of summer off and just time to get his head right again. And obviously if Trent Alexander-Arnold could keep developing as well, then there's chances to give him a bit of a break, and you know, to give him a bit of a you know, a kick up the arse maybe as well. I don't know. So I'm not worried about our fullbacks really. I think we could do with greater competition in terms of these extra games we're going to have next season, but hopefully that'll come from buying a young left back that they'll have from Fulham or whoever, and then Trent can continue to develop. I think that'll be okay for us next season.
I think Mike on Milner, a lot of people are saying is that he always has to check to his other foot, because he's essentially on the wrong side, and he's done a job on that side all season. But again, you know, is it that almost good enough? And I guess it's about where you shuffle your money as well. I mean, I've seen you, Tony, saying a couple of times about, you know, there was this report or a few reports about 200 million being spent on all this sort of things, and you've dampened that a little bit and said it might not be that much.
Well, do you think they're getting 40 for Sturridge and 30 for Sacco?
So I mean, you know, I guess it's that as well, isn't it? I mean, I think we can always say you can upgrade on players, but it's what ones you're going to upgrade on.
Yeah,
you can't do it all in one summer.
Generally speaking, it's a difficult one talking about Liverpool's fullbacks because of the way that Klopp probably wants to play as his ideal system, which is them occupying spaces really, really high. And it's noticeable at any point of the game. You see the positions that Milner and Klein are taking up. You know that they're inside the opposition half for the most part. So it's a difficult position to play, I think. I think that accentuates some of the issue around Milner, because you know he's getting on a little bit, but I think he's had a very solid, dependable season. I think defensively, Klein's been quite consistent. Although I think he was more effective going forward early in the season. I do think that's down to legs and playing a lot of games. I'm relatively happy with him as a solid defensive option, which ought to be his primary objective. So I'm quite relaxed about that. But I think it does come down to the competition and the ability to be able to, if not rotate, sort of manage it really across two major competitions, which we'll have hopefully next season. I think that is the main issue. But I also think with Milner, I think possibly his one-footedness is accentuated by the fact that we don't have a left-footed player in the team. And in an obvious sense of balance, Liverpool lack left-footedness. Mm. Now, that could be partly solved by employing a left-footed player higher up the pitch in midfield or as one of the three strikers. But it seems to me that it sort of accentuates his right-sidedness and always having to come inside. I think early in the season, though, he was a really good outlet for Liverpool. He saw a lot of the ball, but he played a lot of incisive balls inside that when we had a sort of a full complement of attacking players in Firmino and Coutinho picking up the ball between the lines. He was often quite an effective attacking option for Liverpool. That seems to have gone on the wane, I think, over the last couple of months or so as we've become a bit more prosaic in our play.
Do you think the focus, Tony, is maybe that, you know, some of these games we played, like last night, for instance, there's almost an onus that falls on, like, the fullbacks or, like, Lucas at times to almost do stuff that he shouldn't have to, really, because the creative players are so locked up by, you know, Watford's tactics. I mean, we didn't see much of Firmino, for example, last night, did we? You know, given what he's been doing recently.
No, and I think we have to get used to that. I mean, we all do this now, where we look at every individual performance and say, well, he hasn't done much tonight, but the team's won.
Mm.
And that's the thing we've got to get back into. I think as Liverpool supporters, we've sort of lost that bigger picture and that idea that the games that you do just have to grind it out and individuals aren't going to shine. It's not going to be their day. It just can't be, because the tactical way you're setting up, because the way the opposition's setting up, there's no way that they can impose the way themselves on the games they would usually. Just on Klein, the last 3 months for me, I don't think it's energy with him. I think he's got certain weaknesses that are being found out. Allardyce did something very early in the Palace game where he switched Zaha and Townsend, and he basically sacrificed Townsend. Zaha's their best player, best footballer, but he put him over onto the left side on Klein's side, and the reason for that was he knew that Townsend on the left would shut Liverpool down. He would press, he would harry, and that would mean Milner, Coutinho, everyone on that left side would have a problem. And he gave Liverpool the right. And if you look back at that first half, especially the amount of times Liverpool played overlaps and Klein's a spare man, Allardyce gave them that space in the belief that Klein couldn't hurt them. Now, when teams are trying to shut you down, it's a problem if your outlet can't hurt teams. And then I looked at last night, there was a couple of instances, one where Jan Mat beats him and gets a dangerous crossing, and then at the other end, within the space of 30 seconds, Klein can't beat Jan Mat, and he crosses against him, comes back, hits him in the face and goes out, which is unlucky. But again, there's no threat at one end and the other end, and then for their chance at the end, for all that Liverpool can't defend high balls, Klein's out of position. Klein's totally out of position. The 94th minute of a football match we have to win. His form is gone. Now, where I agree with the lads is that doesn't mean it's a priority. The priority is to get his form back. The priority isn't to sell him. Liverpool have done this before. Players lose form, panic, buy, change. Liverpool have to look at the bigger picture and say, we've got Trent coming through, who Steven Gerrard used the word he's a beauty about last week, very deliberately. That's been my opinion of Trent for some time, but more importantly, people who know have that opinion. We've got to make sure there's a pathway for Trent, and the obvious pathway is to keep Klein and for there to be a gradual progression and a gradual change. And the same for me should apply on the left. Milner's not an emergency. He's not his best. He's got too many games in his legs. You don't have to bomb him out.
Mm.
Keep him in until there's someone better to replace him. And I think if you look at loads of Liverpool players over the last decade who've been sold and then the replacements come in, we would have been so much better keeping them and getting a replacement who we could school and bring through gradually, which was the old Liverpool way.
I think in some ways Trent is the ideal sort of deputy for Klein, in the sense that he will offer you a lot more going forward. And I think it just will have the opportunity to bring him in and just have, give him an amount of games so that he can develop in his own time. Because obviously, he's still really, really inexperienced. But I think, as Tony says there, I mean, Klein's had better phases of the season. I just think that, generally speaking, he's been relatively consistent, albeit that you point out a couple of defensive lapses last night. I think certainly the game against City early in the a month or so ago, I thought he was excellent in that game, stepping out of defence, anticipating the ball. I think, you know, we do fixate on players' dips in form, and that's been a little bit of a thing with him. But I think generally speaking, he's had a solid season.
I think we started the show as well by talking about how hard Watford make it for you, and they don't make it. You know, the hardest they make it is for the fullbacks. I thought, and I didn't know too much about Nianga. He was like a bit of a kind of a wonder kid from AC Milan. I didn't realize how big he was, and he was just battering into Milner all the time. And I thought this was meant to be like, you know, this nippy lad who, like, you know, and he was just like,
he was smart in money as well. I don't think he even knows what he's doing himself. Like, he's got ability, but he's totally unpredictable.
But he was just absolutely battering. He was into Milner. If he didn't give Milner a second on the ball, really, then you've got. You know, the other lads that they've got up front as well, like Deeney's all over the place. He's just taking it in turns to bully different people, isn't he? And so, and I think, looking at that game and thinking, well, you know, you've got to earn the right to play, like you do, especially for the fullbacks. Like, they kind of really knew in the game. So I think, you know, they did all right in terms of kind of what was thrown at them.
All right, well, on another one, a similar vein, really, in terms of a continual conversation among Liverpool fans is Origi. And I think, I've seen him getting criticised again in some quarters for last night. He isn't involved a lot. He has a couple of efforts on goal. He latches onto that great ball from Matip and does the defender, but then doesn't really test the goalkeeper with the shot. There's the one where he goes outside and forces a save from Gomez as well. But in general, I mean, I've seen people like people were commenting on our Facebook page last night just saying, just drop him. And I was like, well, who for? You know, he's in the side because there's injuries at the moment, but also all the usual caveats, he's young and everything else. I mean, where do you stand on Origi, Tony? I mean, he's having a tough time.
He is, but I think there's enough to be persevered with. There's loads of weaknesses, and there's a glaring ones. From kickoff, his first touch, yes, they accounted, he took 8 touch with his first touch. So it was 8 touches, bang, 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 bang. Against Crystal Palace, there was two occasions in the box where the ball's played into his feet, and he crying out, just roll your man, turn him, get your shot off. And he took 5, 6, 7, 8 touches, and that's each of which took him further and further outside the box. And all of this is a display of technical ability, and he's shielding the ball well, but he's not threatening with it. And when you're the pinnacle of the team, you're the front man, you've got to do more than that. He doesn't trouble the opposition enough. There's no question about that. And you look at the things he doesn't do. Sometimes when crosses come in and you want him to attack the ball in the air, he doesn't do that well enough.
He's not there either, is he, in terms of his position? I mean, the one I mentioned before, I think it's Klein who squares it. And it's not the worst ball in the world. And Origi's not in the picture. I think you see Lallana running really late.
Yeah.
And he's too late. But you kind of look at it going, where's the centre forward there?
But I don't think the problem's actually with Origi. I think the problem's with the squad, because in a good squad, he would be your man you turn to when you want to see a game out and you want to get runners in behind fullbacks and stretch the play, do all that kind of thing. At the minute, he's playing every game, so he's the player with his back to goal. He's the player they line on to get you the goal. And he's not there yet. So we're asking things of him that he can't deliver. And this is the thing where next season, you'd hope that Liverpool, whatever they do in the transfer market, they're not in that kind of situation. But I do think there's enough there that, again, you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. You don't just decide, nah, not for us now. He is still young, the centre-forward's going, I think he's 22, 23, something like that. He's very young. He's got pace. He's got good energy. He's got a good work ethic. He has got good skill. And the time when his close control with men around him is something else. But all those other parts of his game, the weaknesses are undermining him at the minute. So they're what's got to be worked on. But I hope that they do that. I hope that Liverpool see him as a long-term project and not one you give up on too early.
I mean, go on.
No, I was just going to say, it's funny with Origi, because I thought his best period was 45-60, and that was probably Liverpool's as well. I thought Liverpool came out second half and played some actually pretty good stuff, and it's a real shame they didn't get the second goal there, because then, you know, even the Guardian probably have to say it's a good away performance, you know. But we didn't get that goal then, and then you have all the problems with the last 20 where what we were offered have a bit of a go. But in that period, I think he's pretty good. Origi, he's getting involved in the play, he's pulling defenders about, he's causing them trouble. But the problem with that is, you know, you can't just play well when your team's on the front foot. You know, we need to find a way in that first half in particular to find a way to be of use to Liverpool, and he just hasn't quite got that at the moment. Yeah, when Liverpool were on the front foot in that second half, and he was part of it, and he has a couple of decent efforts, and he's also, you know, in terms of his running, creating space for others. But you just think in the first half it felt a bit like we were playing with 10. And then you think, well, you might as well have Sturridge up there then, because at least he might do something brilliant.
He looked sharp when he came on.
He looked all right, yeah. So
Origi, for me, when he plays in that central role, he isn't, his movement's not good enough from side to side, and he tends to do most of his best work cutting in mainly from the left-hand side, and that's where he gets that sort of trademark curling shot off from. But I'd like to see, I mean, if he's going to play as the central striker, and I'm not entirely sure that is the best option. I think you could easily interchange where Firmino was playing last night with Origi, and play Firmino central and play Origi from the left. But if he's going to play central, he's got to be a little bit more inclined to move out wide, because I just think he seems more comfortable and confident in those wider areas. I think the part of the frustration with him as well is the fact that on occasion when his confidence is up, he can look like a world beater.
Yeah, yeah.
And some of his touches are incredible at times, and then he'll revert back to a far more laboured way of getting the ball under control, and everything sort of happens a little bit too slowly with him. But then just every now and then, in the wake of him scoring against Bournemouth the other week with the header, he had about 5 or 10 minutes where his touch was just absolutely incredible, and he was performing all kinds of tricks and moving away from his man. But it seems to be something that he can only do in maybe five minute spells, as opposed to throughout an entire game when his performance is a little bit more cumbersome at times.
You've also got to look back to last spring, where I thought he was first name Liverpool team sheet before he got injured against Devon. He was outstanding up front in a different formation, different shape, and it suited him. But that is his template at the moment. Klopp should be saying to him, look at Emre. Emre's been through these troughs, these difficult periods. You are still a young developing player in a foreign country. All the things which we tend to all forget when we watch these games, and that these are young developing players, and it's not always straightforward, and there will be ups and downs. But Emre showed them that there is a way back, there is a way to rediscover the form and maybe improve on what you've shown previously. So there's more than enough there, but I would hope that next season he's Liverpool's third choice forward, or whatever, however they set up, however way you want to do it, now if they play through up front. But he would be the second one you would call on after you get an injury rather than the first.
Yeah, there's one final point on him, though, is that when you've got that situation where Klein's lashing balls in towards the near post, if he's going to be playing as a centre forward, I'd like to see him develop that capability to make a near post run. He's very often sort of quite flat footed, I think, in the penalty area when Liverpool are going forward. He doesn't seem to anticipate like a striker would. And I think you can coach that into players, and I'm sure that'll be something that Klopp's got his eye on if he still sees him as a central option. But as I said before, just generally comfortable coming in from either side.
That anticipation that Mike's mentioned, Kay, if you look at Lallana's shot, everyone's looking at the ball in the crossbar, but so is Origi. Yeah. It's the one thing he shouldn't be doing. You see him, I only picked it up on the replay. He actually watched it go over him. There's not a moment in his mind where he thinks turn and run. It's only when it hits the bar when he actually makes a move. Now, if you go back to Liverpool's Robbie Fowler, for example, Ian Rush, Michael Owen, they would already be on the move, following it in. It's basic centre forward play.
I mean, the other thing, I want to keep sort of introducing this strand of what's got to be fixed, if you like, because it's the time of year where people are talking about that. And so, because we're talking about the forwards, what do you all think Liverpool need to do? Because I mean, we've scored 71 goals in the league, which is the same as Spurs, I think, one less than Chelsea, I think, something like that. So that's good. You know what I mean? And we've conceded as a 42 or something like that in the league. And that's obviously what you would say needs to be fixed, if you like. And yet, nevertheless, people are talking about, well, let's buy a dead expensive centre forward. People are saying they're still not sure about Firmino and things like that. And yet we've scored all of those goals. And also, as well, to twist it on its head, you know, when people say, you know, you need someone who's in the charts almost every year, like a Harry Kane or whatever. Well, Man United have got Ibrahimovic in the charts, and look where they are in the league.
Everton have got Lukaku.
Yeah.
I think it is an obvious thing, not so much for us to fix, but we're going to need more personnel anyway next season. So it's just an obvious thing to recruit one more. And in terms of the goals return, I mean, Firmino's got a respectable tally. Mane has as well for the games that he's played. I think there's also the issue of potentially Coutinho dropping further back next season from your first choice lineup as well. So there's scope for one more anyway, but you'd need one regardless of that for the amount of games that the Champions League would involve and the required quality to be playing in those games. So I just think it's an obvious thing for us to do. If you can get someone who is a little bit more prone to score 20 goals maybe than 12 or 13, then that's the ideal scenario. Finding that player obviously is the big challenge, but I don't think there's any issue with us finding another striker. I think we need one for the required quality and for the amount of games that we'll have. I
thought Klopp gave the game away the other day when he was speaking to the national journalist, and for those who don't know, the national journalist speaks separately to the manager, to the broadcast journalist. So the national lads go in with Klopp and they ask him about Brewster and Woodburn and their opportunities, and he basically said we won't be relying on them next season. Which I found dead interesting. The signing a centre forward, in other words, that's shorthand for we are buying a forward.
Yeah.
And I'm taking it for granted that Sturridge goes, because then that's just run its, for whatever reason, and we can point fingers this way and the other, doesn't matter. I think everyone sees which way is their head, and so you buy a centre forward who can and will play more often. And I think Klopp will want a winger. I don't think it'll be Sturridge replacement and another forward. It'll be Sturridge replacement and another winger, and that's the way he sees it, and that's the way he wants to play. But I just find it dead interesting. I think as the season's gone on, our priorities have changed slightly. In the autumn, I would have been saying you've got to go and buy a first-choice goalkeeper, no matter what, go and pay whatever it takes, go and buy a keeper who puts everything straight in that position for years to come. Then all of a sudden, as the season's wore on, Mignolet has become, he was a bomb scare for a time, his confidence was shot, any cross that came in. And Pardew said it last night, every manager in the league worked on it, and he knew it was a weakness, and it was a weakness of belief in him from the defenders, and it was just broken for loads of different reasons. But I think over the last few games, probably since Hull onwards, you have to look at Mignolet, and whatever anyone thought of him previously, you have to judge him on his form. And his form for the last 2-3 months, I think, has been very, very solid. I thought against Watford last night, he was commanding, which is a word I've never, ever used about him before. And I think you have to judge him on his form, not on any preconceived ideas you have of him. And you might think that we still need a goalkeeper. I think Klopp still sees Karius as his long-term number one. And I think Mignolet's done enough to basically make, if there is a goalkeeper out there who's world class, who wants to come, who wouldn't affect the budget for a centre forward or for a centre back or a centre midfielder, fine, go and get him. But if all those boxes aren't ticked, I think Mignolet might well have just done enough to keep going.
And the old adage about goalkeepers was that they improve much later in their careers than outfield players, and I don't think we've ever really given them the opportunity to maybe fulfil on that idea. But we are beginning to see it now. I mean, I'd argue that he's had a good season right from the off, and I think it's as a season wears on, it's easy to forget saves that are made. And
yeah.
I remember, you know, even go back as far as Spurs away, right at the start of the season, he made an outrageous save that took my breath away from
it.
Saved a penalty at Arsenal. I know he was blamed for the Luiz goal against Chelsea, but he saved a penalty from Costa in that. Yeah. I mean, it shouldn't really be judged on penalties, but I think in those sort of 10 games against the top six, if you like, there's been quite a few significant saves that he's made that have go back a little bit further than this gradual improvement over the last couple of months. I mean, Man United back in January, he was absolutely outstanding in that game. He made 2 or 3 outstanding saves in that game. So I think, and you could argue he was unfortunate to be dropped at the time he was, and I would argue that was a mistake from Klopp, because I think he did it sooner than he needed to, basically. And obviously, then there was the confusion over Karius. His response to coming back in has been superb. Other than the drop against Hull, I think we are pressed to sort of lay a particular goal on him across 15, 20 Liverpool games. And I think he's beginning to prove people wrong. But it's not just in the making saves that he's, you know, he's the vaunted shot stopper thing. his kicking is radically different now. I don't know who's been working with him on that, and you know, maybe Achterberg for once comes in for some praise. But the distance on his kicks, has changed radically. I mean, he's getting sort of 20 yards,
and you can hear further. Him as well. He's communicating better. You can actually hear him in games, whereas you know he did seem to be sort of glued to his line almost, didn't he?
And I think just the general improvement, the fact that he's continued to make saves, his kicking's improved, that is fed into a greater assuredness and confidence. And what you're seeing that expressed in his willingness to come for balls, and that in itself obviously takes pressure from the centre to the centre backs. One thing that came to my head before that whilst we were chatting was that I think defensively this season, although the narrative is that we still struggled defensively, it's mainly been in and around set pieces. I think in open play, given the way that we've played at times very expansively, we've actually coped pretty well. When Lovren and Matip have been able to play together, we've defended relatively well. Where we've been exposed at times is just from the set plays, and there weren't many of them last night. It was just an overall.
And the ones that there were, they dealt with relatively well. I mean, you know, the other thing that got highlighted on Sky as well before the game was second balls on set pieces as well, and you know, it therefore made you look for it. You know what I mean, when you were watching a game and Liverpool.
I think you try and do, and obviously there's the talk about Van Dijk. We need one more anyway, because for me, you know, Clavan's not good enough. Sacco will probably be on his way. Beyond Matip and Lovren, there isn't an obvious candidate really to deputise. So the thinking is you go out and you buy someone potentially who can challenge or is better than both of those, and then one potentially drops to the bench, but that gives you the squad depth that you need so that when one of them's out, there isn't any radical drop off in quality.
Do you think, I mean, I want to touch on this because we're giving Mignolet praise. I want to touch on this Paul Doyle piece again in The Guardian today, because I just found it bizarre that it almost felt like to me that he'd written a piece knocking Liverpool before Liverpool had even played the game, and then the game didn't change the piece almost. And it was, he had to go about Mignolet in the piece in relation to last night's game, in relation to a save he made. And I couldn't understand that logic. He also had to go at the centre-halves and everything else. The centre-halves did well. Watford had a sum total, I think, of two shots on target. Do you think, John, that, and I think fans are guilty of this as well, do you think there's a bit of a, almost a narrative about Liverpool this season about, like, because they were flying in October and because the football's different now, it's almost perceived as a failure when the truth of the matter right now is they're the third best team in the country if you look at the league table?
Yeah, and I think there is an element to that. I think we're all kind of guilty of it as fans as well as, I'm sure kind of writers do it too. It's the funny one that makes, I think he is a little bit slow to react to the one where he says, but then he deals with it, and it's a bit of an unusual one. He just sort of gets a bit caught out, I think, but you know, sorts it. And I think we all kind of need to get into the mindset of, you know, sometimes a player's going to have a bad game, and it doesn't mean that everything you feared about him is right. And, you know, Lovren's poor against Palace. You know, he maybe isn't protected enough and things like that, but he is poor. But it doesn't, and the contract situation is not an ideal time and not on the back of that. But I think, you know, if we get a new centre-half next season, he's going to have a bad game as well at some point. And just because he hasn't done our heads in as much yet, it doesn't kind of mean that, you know, that it's any more or less of a problem. It's that, you know, sometimes a defender's going to have a bad game and you need to cover for that. And I think we haven't found a way as a team enough to cover up, to get our mates out of jail, and I think to cover for mistakes. So Lovren makes an error and it just seems to be a goal, and you think, well, I see Stefan Onchoa make headers, but if you had sort it.
Yeah.
And I used to see, you know, Carragher would mess up sometimes, you know, he'd have his mate there or whatever, and you think, you know, without, what I've quite liked about these away games and this run of away wins, and that's something, as you say, you know, another club and maybe prepares for that, but it's not fashionable to praise Liverpool for that, so it doesn't happen. And I think that's what I've really liked about these run of away games, is there's been a mindset of, oh, we're gonna get through this together, and we are who we are, and who's playing, and I'm not gonna worry about how is Lucas as good as Jordan Henderson. This is what we've got, and I think they've kind of had that mindset really. And sometimes I think the players have maybe looked at injuries as a bit of an excuse themselves, because that becomes a narrative. Oh, Liverpool can't do it because he's out. So blah blah.
Mane's gone to Africa, exactly.
Whereas I think there's been a bit of a change in mindset. What Liverpool needs to do is to almost be able to flip with mindsets more within games, and I think that's what top teams do. I think, you know, we need to, you know, in these away games, it's like, oh, this is like siege mentality, backs against the wall. If you're like, this is how we do it, and then home against Palace, they just forget all that. because oh, it's at home, and you think, well,
but I think the manager's part of that though.
Yeah, maybe.
I thought the reaction to Lovren's performance against Palace was mad. I thought it was extraordinary. He had a bad game. He was a fault for both goals for me. And that is where it is. You can't take responsibility away from it. It's his fault. But then you've got to look at the context of the other games. Now, I think against Watford, against West Brom, against Stoke, I think he's played really well in those three games.
Superb in the derby against Lukaku as well, wasn't he?
Superb against Lukaku. United away, when he had to babysit Trent Arnold, I thought he was superb that day. There's enough good games. The problem with Lovren is there's no in-between between his playing really well and really poor. And that's got to be sorted. That's something that's got to be addressed. Maybe competition for his place will help that. But I also think there's an element of the way we set up. I think in our three away, most seasons away games, the centre-halves have to play as centre-halves with support. I think at Anfield, you play as centre-halves and you're more exposed.
Yeah.
And Klopp said that. Klopp admitted that. You are tested more playing centre-half for Liverpool in the way he sets up because he wants his full-backs high. So if you look the way Liverpool set up, Lucas in front and the two centre-backs, it's three defenders a lot of the time. So if you make any kind of slip as a defender, you're going to get punished. Other teams, you don't have that kind of problem. You have security all around you. I remember someone saying to me about, you funny mentioned Honcho. Someone said to me when he was playing well and getting a lot of credit, let's see how good he is when he has to play 10 yards further up the pitch. Because the best Liverpool defenders aren't penalty box defenders, the ones who play midway in the half. And the minute he was asked to step out, and the minute Didier Mann was a little bit further away from him, he got exposed. And I think as a manager, you have to find a way of playing with the players you've got.
Mm.
I think Klopp's will find that balance at Anfield more than anywhere else.
Yeah, and a lot of the times when Lovren has looked at his worst is when he gets dragged out and he gets outside of his penalty area, and it comes down to decision making and timing. And I think sometimes that doesn't come particularly naturally to him. I think the set piece side of thing, again, that's something you can work on. You can coach into defenders, but I think sometimes the actual decision making and being able to anticipate and come out at the right time, I think that's a challenge for him. I think that's where he possibly lacks just a little bit of quality.
Bring him, just to talk about positioning the centre half, to bring it back to the Watford game for a minute. What are they doing at the end?
Know what?
Why have they got? Why have our centre half got chances? When we're protecting a 1-0 lead.
Lovren's got a little bit of that in him. Matip's got a little bit of that in him all the time. The occasional sortie. He's been watching a few Alan Hansen videos, I think. But he's actually very capable, and I think we've become. You've seen it so rarely from Liverpool centre-halves over the year. They've been very, very disciplined centre-halves. That comes from Carragher, obviously, setting the bar on that thing. It's a massive surprise to see Liverpool defenders go further forward. Obviously, in the circumstances of the last 5 or 10 minutes, it seems a bit even more crazy. But as I say, it's a huge shock to the system as a Liverpool fan to see anyone coming that far out of their position.
Well, it was like I asked Klopp after the West Brom game. I said to him about the way Liverpool have played, the kind of tactics they used, the discipline, to use Mike's word, that the players have shown in that game. And Is this a good sign? He said, yeah, but we're not there yet. He said, no one should take it that because we've done this games, that we won't make mistakes in the future games. We've still got a lot more to do in that front, but we are playing much more grown-up football. And I think everyone agreed with that. Those games, you come away saying, yeah, they haven't been great, but it is a little bit more mature what they're doing, a bit more professional. And then last night, it was in the 92nd, 93rd minute, your two centre-halves, one's crossing to the other. I can't think of anything less professional. I was like, everyone's the same. What are you doing? You've got one thing to do at this time in the game with a 1-0 lead with Champions League football stake. Stay in your position. It's that simple. There's nothing else you have to do. And the marauding. If you're 4-0 up and made up, go and do what you like. Go and do back heels in the 6-yard box if you want. But 1-0 up, no. Go to your own box and don't move.
Yeah, it was mad. It was mad. I think everyone was screaming at that one no matter where you were as well. And then there's obviously the situation where Watford at the bar, everyone's talking about luck and stuff like that. Doesn't really matter, does it? We've won.
Yeah. Well, we had the bar as well, so yeah. It's one of them. It evens itself out over the game. I mean, it's heart and mouth stuff, isn't it, right at the end? But, you know, but generally speaking, you know, you look at it over the game and Watford didn't create a huge amount.
No.
And so they get one right at the end, and it's, you know, everyone kind of panics, but you know, Jem, I think I was, you know, thinking on 70, oh, I don't think they've really done anything, really. Yeah. You know, even when we weren't kind of creating enough, they weren't either. You know, we just had so much of the ball, especially in the, you know, from, as I say, from 45 to 70, just looked in complete control of the game. And maybe just the problem was just not finding a goal then. And so there's always going to be a few nerves. But I think, you know, you look at balance of chances created, you look at the balance of play. And I think Liverpool deserved that win and they got it. And it was, you know, you're talking about the battle to top four. It was, in terms of the United and City ones, we had the toughest game and we're the one who won it. And so I think you've got to praise them for it.
I think as well, if you look, because I looked this up last night because I was intrigued by it. Like, Watford's home record's actually pretty decent this season. And they'd only lost five before they played us last night. That's the Chelsea, Arsenal, Stoke City, Tottenham and Southampton. And in none of them, really, I mean, they got beat 4-1 by Tottenham, 3-1 by Arsenal. But the others, they haven't been heavily beaten at home. They've given everyone a game, and it almost feels like that they've said to themselves, "Well, this is where we're going to pick up our points." And you know, the manager afterwards as well was quite he wasn't giving Liverpool much praise, and he was sort of saying, you know, they scored a worldie and they didn't have any other chances really. But then neither did Watford, so it was one of them. I thought what was interesting as well was Klopp afterwards. I mean, we talk about this on so many shows now because he's been doing it all season, but just his thing on trying to engender positivity really around Everton, Liverpool too. And he was doing his interview to the studio with Carragher and with the presenter and everything else and Pardew, and he dropped a question in something like, you know, you've got into that position now where top four's in your own hands, you can qualify for the Champions League if you win the last three. He said something like, but what if you slip up? And Klopp was absolutely fuming with him. But what was interesting was he said, you're like asking that question, turning something so positive into a negative. He said, you're like the Liverpool fans. And then he said, and you're like you, Carragher. And like Carragher didn't look like he knew what to say. But it's interesting that he's always prepared to turn on the fans like that and say, you know, say what about the part we need to play. I mean, you wrote a piece, didn't you, at the end of last week about everyone getting off from the Palace game?
Yeah, I think he's trying to challenge perceptions, isn't he? And Liverpool fans are the product of what we've witnessed over the last, you know, you want to go back 30 years, you want to go back 3 years, because we've become so used to disappointments and, you know, sort of disappointments in not being able to convert a title chance on a couple of occasions, losing cup finals, forever seeming to sort of concede late crucial goals. And I think, you know, that does condition people's thinking. And I think Klopp, right from the very beginning, you know, his original sort of doubters to the believers quote was something that he felt was an important part of the psyche of football. And you know, you can talk about tactics all you want, but mentality and the way that a club views itself, I think, is something absolutely critical. And he absolutely wants to challenge the nationwide perception of what Liverpool is, and if that feeds into the way managers perceive us as well. And he wants to create a different narrative that Liverpool aren't weak defensively or that they've got a dodgy goalkeeper, then that's part and parcel of it. And I think he's always recognised the power of the media, and that's why he's so willing really to sort of chat freely on shows like this. You compare that to, say, Benitez, who wouldn't really sort of go into any real detail. Dalglish was another one that shunned really the media as a vehicle to change people's thinking. And I think he's absolutely right to do that. And I also think his presence on the pitch at the end of the game and just creating that sort of that you know, that one thing mentality, I think that's absolutely critical. Fans really feed off that, and obviously that's only in front of the away support last night. I'd like to see him do that a little bit more at Anfield, to be perfectly honest, after the good results, because that's one of his unique selling points, is the fact that he's got this personality. People absolutely, I mean, at the end of every game, I'm dying for him to come down and salute the fans, and I think he's a little bit more reticent to do that than perhaps than we'd like, but I think he could do it a bit more.
I think it's still in his head about when he got all that shit after West
after
Brom.
The West Brom, I think, yeah. The way that was perceived. I mean, I gave him a bit of stick about that myself because I didn't think it was that appropriate, but I think fans absolutely lap it up. And if we're going to become a more positive fan base and less paranoid, then, you know, he's got a job to assist with that whole process.
I think Liverpool are a critical point in the history in terms of relationship with supporters, and I think that's clear in a number of fronts. The piece that Mike wrote about the Crystal Palace game was absolutely spot on. The amount of fans that did leave early, and I'll hold my hands up, I left early. I wasn't working, I took my lad, he was in school the next day. And ideally I want him in bed 7:30, he's 6. I don't want him up late on a school night. And the lesson that you learn from Anfield now that they've added the main stands, add an 8,000
seats. It's a nightmare to get away.
Well, if you leave Anfield now on the whistle, it's an hour and a half to get home. If you leave 2 minutes before, you can be home in 15 minutes, in my case. If you've got young kids, it's a logical thing to do. I think Liverpool need to work on that. I think it's something that you need to... How are we going to make it as accessible to and from the ground? What are we going to do? What are we going to do to make fans want to stick around? I know clubs now looking at having selling ale after the game on
concourses. Liverpool are doing it for the rest of the season.
We'll do that and sell it cheap. Do you know what I mean? Give lads a pint, charge 750. Let's do
go
all
and have
these
your
things.
£2 pint after the game. Yeah,
you've exactly. You've got a manager who wants to put everyone together. Don't stand in his way.
Yeah,
let it happen. Do everything you can to allow it to happen. Whatever that is, whatever you think might make a little difference. Because I think Liverpool has become not a fractured club, but it's a club where people too easy doubt and too easy don't expect the best. And I think that whole mentality needs to be turned on its head if we're to stand a chance. And I think that it's been going on for a long, long... I don't think it's anything new. I think it's accelerated in recent years for various reasons, but I think changing that dynamic is the key. As much as having a top manager, as much as having top players, is the key to Liverpool going to the next level. Because I think as long as doubt remains, as long as we don't think they can go the X amount, they won't.
Yeah, I mean, it does. I mean, we're all guilty of it. I mean, I've done it. I think we're all... It's almost like you flick a switch, isn't it, at times, John, and just go, oh, fucking hell, here we go again. You could imagine it, as much as I hate to say it, you could imagine it at the weekend. You know, we've got Southampton at our home. You know, in your mind, I'll say it again, I'd love to go when it's all rocking and like we're all right behind the team. More realistically, based on what I've seen over, you know, however many years, it's probably going to be a bit of a go at the start. If we don't score, it'll go quite quiet. If we concede, everyone will be absolutely fucking fuming immediately on the back. And we are sort of, you know, I think there's the double hit, if you like, the double whammy of our history alongside the near misses, alongside, you know, having to cope with that we're not the Liverpool of old almost. And that's why we are so weird.
it's like, you separate yourself from like the problem as well. You're like, oh, the fans need to do this. And I've heard so many fans who have been to matches and I think, well, you're not all that, you know. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like people speak like, oh, the fans aren't loud enough. And I'm like, well, I've been to games with you and you're not like starting all the songs or anyway. I mean, you do. You're a nightmare. But
Pop's got a woolly twang.
So yeah, Bob are very, very much exempt from that. But there's loads of Liverpool fans who I know who like, oh, they'll talk a great game on the forums or whatever about what the fans should be doing and all that. And then they get in there and they're as miserable as everyone. So we still want to separate ourselves as well. We've got to think, well, it's up to everyone. I'll make it up to me.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. I mean, there's been games when I've been quiet and I'm a sort of notorious rabble rouser. They're certainly in former years. I'm not as loud as I am because I'm approaching 50. And I think, I mean, this is a whole different conversation, but what's lacking from Anfield is youth and vibrancy. And it shouldn't, the responsibility for creating an atmosphere shouldn't lie on diehards, you know, fellas in their 40s and 50s and 60s who've been there and seen it all. In the old days, basically, those fellas would join in with the younger fans who haven't seen too much football, who are going through their third and their fourth Liverpool seasons and are anticipating something really, really exciting. That's the thing that the club really needs to challenge. How they do it, I mean, that's an entirely different question. I haven't got any sort of obvious answers to that, but...
Well, I mean, in two recent weekends, this weekend just gone, I've just been to Monaco, which isn't known for great support, but nevertheless, they did have a small section of what you call ultras, if you like, and they were young lads with flags, with loud ailers, trying to have a go, and it got it going a few times, better than it would have been if they weren't there. Similarly, and on another level, to be fair, I went to Celtic. And again, you know, it's young lads down the front who are getting that rail seating section going for 90 minutes non-stop. And they're changing the perception among that section of what it is to support the team.
I think it's the impact it has on the whole stadium if you've got an area like that. And obviously Liverpool created the area at the back of the Kop, which was at the time, I think it was the three blocks at the back, was a sort of a designated standing and singing section. And that's gone on the wane and you know, people still stand there.
It was 20 years ago and it's the same fellas.
Yeah. And, you know, and But I was concerned about this when the cop was seated, is that, and you know, for the people who remain on the cop, I mean, they were in their 20s when those season tickets were first issued. There's no reason, obvious reason, why they should stop going to watch and support Liverpool. But those guys are now in their 40s and 50s. The demographic has completely changed. And where supporters have stopped going the game and given it up for whatever reasons, family, money, the slack has not been taken up by young people. It's been picked up by just a generally more conservative person. I think today's society is more conservative naturally. And, you know, whether you like it or not, you'd probably say that most of those spaces are now filled by your Premier League neutrals, as I call them, who've got a slight favouring towards Liverpool, but they're not fully committed to Liverpool FC like a local fan would be, or someone who's travelling sort of 200 miles every week. I just think it's a different mentality of those people, but it's a completely different conversation, isn't it?
I think the age issue is vital, and I'd want to gloss over that you just dropped in that you went to Monaco at the weekend just as you do.
It was a stag do. We went to
the We're sending him to a different club every week. that's what we do.
Just keep him away from Anfield. My entire match going life, I went with my dad, and my mates would come with me and my dad, and I'd stand next to my dad or sit next to my dad in the cop. There were times I couldn't sit next to him because he was unbearable, he was a narc. Reserve games, all you could hear was his voice just shouting abuse to the opposition players, and I used to die. But, but in big games, I'd be giving it the biff, just giving it absolutely everything, singing my heart out. I'd be looking at him, and he knew all the words, but he just stood there watching the game.
Yeah.
It's reaching an age where you stop doing that.
Yeah.
That kind of passion that drives you when you're 15 onwards to about 30 odd, that does dilute as you get older. There's no way around that. And it does, Mike, spot on. It has to be replaced, otherwise it disappears. But there's something that I think Liverpool also do, which is helpful. I think we set the bar too high. I think we're allowed to have games where there isn't much of an atmosphere.
Yeah.
It didn't stop us in the 70s and 80s, more the 80s than anything else. If you go back to the 80s and 84, the average attendance was about 34,000 when there's endemic unemployment. Those games we watched in near silence. Those games we just watched and knew we were going to win. And we're comfortable in that knowledge. So why are you going to be passionate about this? Liverpool's going to win.
Yeah.
And it's every game. Southampton home can't in the league when you're going for fourth or third isn't going to be St Etienne. It's just not, but it can be better, and that's what we've got to aim
for. And I think I'll just say, sorry, Mike, I think in terms of, we always think his atmosphere is singing for 90 minutes as well, and it doesn't have to be this kind of drone of singing that you have in Germany. I think just making Anfield a more positive place where...
And a more narky place.
Support our lads and give them hell, and I think creating that... Just important, but in fact, probably more important than how many versus the Scouser Tommy, you know.
You know what I'd have a banning order for, and it does my head in Anfield. We now get our own players booked. If one of our players dies in for a tacky there, they'd be going, oh, from the cop. You go, what are you doing? And the referee goes, say to his pocket, what are you doing? He's just snitched a 30,000 grass.
There was the Spurs game at Anfield last season, and Sacco went in with a challenge, and the cop basically gave Spurs a pen. Because with the groan, it was like, I don't think it got given in.
He was doing that to Mignolet as well, though, weren't he? Every time he tried to catch the ball.
I think, again, it's all about that paranoia, isn't it? You know, that's the thing. And, you know, for the most part, people are really into the idea of Liverpool winning. But the way that it is expressed now is different. I think in the context of this season as well, I think people, I know this because I feel it personally, I've struggled with the whole notion of what looked like a title challenge suddenly dying in the space of about a fortnight. And in part, it was down to Chelsea's relentless run of wins where they put 13 on the bounce, and basically the whole aim for the season seemed to change in a fortnight, and coping with the fact that you're just challenging for Champions League, it's not going to be as intense. It can't be. But at the same time, there's this sense that we could miss out, and we could miss out not just on the title, but you could blow top four, and that preys on people's minds and on their nerves as well. They just need to get over it, basically.
Well, three games left, just to finish up then. Three games left. Southampton on Sunday. Sunday.
Half one. Bouncing moon.
But I mean, what do you see happening with the side? Because, you know, Lallana was influential when he come on. We haven't really talked about him too much, but I mean, I think universally everyone would say that he was good. So, you know, does he get a start? Sturridge looks sharp. But realistically, does he really get a start? I mean, what do you see happening?
I'd make one change, and it would be Lallana for Origi. and I would go with Lallana as one of the three up front with Coutinho and Firmino. Get Firmino back central. I think that's vital at Anfield. You can get away with a little bit away from home. I think at Anfield you've got to have him there to play through. I'd leave Lucas in the midfield. I think it's an extra insurance at the back, and Southampton's big strength, their wide players, they've got the kind of wingers you can hear. So, and as we were saying earlier, our fullbacks aren't on the best of form right now, so I think we can give them a little bit more protection, but in the knowledge that we've still got enough going forward. Of the three games, this is the most difficult.
Yeah,
it's the one that I look at. It's the one where you think if you win, you're probably just about there, and it puts pressure on everyone else. If you lose, the pressure comes back on you. It's also the best of three sides. They've already beaten us, knocked us out of the cup competition, and I think Southampton are one of those teams that I think next season they should be looking to take another step up. I think they should be sort of where Everton are now. I think they should be in that seventh, sixth place, and looking to kick on, because I think they got some very, very good players.
Any advances on that?
I'd be looking to go a bit more attacking than Tony. I think part of the problem is at home is that we've looked at attacking players short, and you know, you talk about what Palace did on the break, but they also, I don't think they really had enough to worry about. So I'd be looking to get Lallana in midfield, and then it's probably Lucas who drops out, and then Emre Can going to the base, which is maybe a bit harsh on Lucas, but I think Shan can get about a bit more and help out his fullbacks a bit more. And then I'd probably look to give Sturridge a go, just because he looks so sharp at the weekend, and it's not really happening for Ridge at the moment. I say, well, you know, that was a nice.
Would you start him though? Because I mean, do you not think one of the things with Sturridge was? Yeah, I mean, because Sturridge there is coming on against tired legs, isn't he? And he goes past two, and it looks great. But can he do that from the start when everyone's fit and fresh?
I think it's two training sessions in a few weeks. So I think if he trains all week, flies.
Yeah.
I think then he gives the manager the decision. I think where he is now, I think starting is a big ask. But in terms of ability,
we'll see.
Yeah, I can't see Sturridge starting just because of the whole scenario around him that's been there all season, really. I'd sort of be inclined to keep Origi in, but I might just think about switching Firmino back into the middle and let him play from the left.
All right, that's been the Anfield wrap. Just to give you a shout, this is a free show. We do the Tour Player, which is a series of subscriber shows. It's £5 a month. There's loads on there as usual. So give that a go. If for whatever reason you don't fancy that and you just want to support us in another way, please give us a review and rate us on both iTunes and on the Facebook page, because that all helps to sort of get the word out there and keep it all going, really. So thanks to Tony, thanks to Mike, and thanks to John. That's been the Anfield app. Sports Social Podcast Network.